Welcome to Interparty Conflict, the podcast where we answer your questions so you can have the best tabletop gaming experience possible. My name is Gabe.
My name is Jeff.
And we have a very special guest with us today, listener and contributor Finn, aka Potato Plunderer.
Hello and well met, everybody.
Yes. Thank you very much for joining us, Finn.
And my pleasure.
So, Finn, I have a question for you. How are you doing today?
Well, I'd say today is a fine Tennessee day. A little colder than it should be in May. Almost sure. June. But yeah, it's been a good day so far.
Cool. Yeah, we were talking before we started recording that you live not too far from where I used to live when we lived in Tennessee.
It's kind of mind-blowing. It's like two random people from on the internet and just like happen to be just have that weird proximity to each other. It's so fun.
Yeah. It's especially funny because we don't have a huge audience as with this podcast, bigger than some, but you know, a couple of years ago we had a quote unquote live episode. I mean, I guess it was a live episode, but we recorded an episode at my local library and a guy showed up that had listened to the podcast.
Whoa. Okay. So, I think you remember mentioning that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It blew my mind that not only are there people that listen, but also there's a guy that listens within driving distance of where I live. That was crazy.
Yeah. They wanted to come see us. And I was like, that was really cool. We were like, oh, wow. Hi.
Yeah. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yeah. Kind of the same thing. Here in Michigan, the weather is like a little on the chilly side as far as late May goes, but like I went for a very nice walk this morning and I don't know, pretty good. Doing pretty good. How about yourself, cool. Gabe?
I'm doing pretty good. Yesterday, my wife and I went to some parks in Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor, Michigan is kind of a college town, not too far from where we live, but apparently they have like 120 parks.
Yeah, kind of a college town. It's like it's like the college town of Michigan.
I guess.
You heard me, Lansing.
My wife is making an effort to visit every one of the parks, and most of the parks are like 30 square feet and a bench, but she's still, you know, so we went to some of them yesterday. We also went to the drive-in yesterday, which was pretty nice. Tomorrow, the day after we record this, Jeff's coming over for dinner, Jeff and Skylar. That's going to be really exciting.
That's fun. Woo!
But I also had a fun little, I mean, I don't want to, we have a guest, so I don't want to take too much of the attention, but I had a very fun thing that I wanted to talk about on the podcast. So just a few days ago, we did our Patreon game for this month. And it's not really the end of an arc. It's sort of the end of an arc. It's the end of something that I had planned for most of the campaign so far. And I had a big kind of a reveal I wanted to be at the end of the session. And so I was trying to think of what cool stuff could go on before that. Because I planned for the reveal to be last session, but we ended up having to end it a little early. So I was trying to fill this one up with cool stuff so that we could get to the reveal at the end. And so one of the things I wanted to do was I thought, okay, we can have a big fight. We haven't really had very much like really engaging combat, in my opinion, so far. And so I was looking at monsters that would be a really good challenge for the party of their current level. And one of the monsters I settled on was a Sphinx, or a Gynosphinx, because Gynosphinx is our CR11. Party's level 8. So I thought, you know, that could be a lot of fun. There could be some cool stuff in there. And so the party was going through some stuff. I won't get into too many of the details, but they come to their destination. The Sphinx is sitting on top of the building that they need to get into. And I thought, okay, they'll show up. Maybe they'll exchange some words. This thing will fly down to them and attack, be a cool battle, yada, 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 whatever. I think I said something along lines of like, you have to defeat me in order to get past. And so one of the players was like, what kind of a challenge? And well, shoot, I'd been planning on a normal battle. So that was all I had. That's all I had in mind. But, you know, well, shoot, if the players, if they can, you know, if there's an option for something potentially more fun, why not try it? So what I did was I did still want to have a normal battle, but as I often do when I'm running a game, I will leave it up to the dice. I will roll a d20. The higher the number, the more in line with the player's expectations I'll go with. Like, high is good for the players, low is bad for the players. So if it was low, I would just say no, or I would just say battle. You know, the Sphinx is just going to attack. I rolled and got a natural 20.
Oh my goodness.
So I said to the players, all right, you pick the challenge. And... The They suggested several things, one of which was a rap battle.
Oh, yes.
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 They also suggested, the other ones that came up was hide and seek and like a, you know, a traditional riddle, a riddle of the Sphinx or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And now, I did not want to do a rap battle, but if I said no to a rap battle, I knew that I would regret it for the rest of my life.
Right, yeah.
As likely would the rest of the players. So, but I also liked the other ideas too. So I said, okay, choose three things. And so they chose rap battle, the riddle, and hide and seek. And now, again, I did not prepare for this, so I was not ready to do a rap battle. I kind of phoned in my side of the rap battle. However, two of the players rapped. I did record it. It will be going up on the Patreon.
Nice.
And then the riddle, I didn't prepare riddle, so I didn't have a great riddle, a riddle in mind. So I lost the rap battle. I did find a riddle online, but they had better riddles for me as the players did. So they won that. The hide and seek ultimately was kind of down to rolls of dice, which I think was a little bit less interesting, but still I like the idea of it. And I did win the hide and seek. I rolled really, really well. But it was still 2 out of 3, so they won. And so they went on without fighting the Sphinx, and instead we got a rap battle as a result.
I think that's a net positive.
Yeah, I would also say that's a net positive. I wish I had, if we had somehow decided on this ahead of time and I could have prepared a rap, I would have preferred that, but stage fright combined with just not knowing how to rap, I was not in a position to put up a fight.
I don't know. I think just the concept of a rap battle against a Sphinx is like that you can take that away as you can take that as a win. Like,
I guess
that's amazing. Like you had mentioned that to me.
I did. I posted on the Discord. I also posted in our personal group chat.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, that is amazing. That is
like,
really,
you can't say no to a rap battle with a Sphinx.
You can't. That's so good. That's so good.
What's even funnier about that situation is the fact that, like, a Sphinx, I don't have the stat block on me at the moment, but, like, I assume they're probably hundreds of years old, very old and ancient, and yet this guy who's been around for so long has never, cannot get the words out. He's just like, I do a lot of things, and I'm really good at math, and I don't really know the words. Okay.
That's better than what I did, to be perfectly honest. I think my part was, I'm a Sphinx, yeah? I'm gonna jinx ya. And that was it.
Gabe, oh no.
At least you had a rhyme that went with it. I said things and math.
Good enough.
Oh, so good.
You're just, just playing the... Let's play the backtrack from 8 Mile.
Oh yeah. Snack back to reality.
Just say mom's spaghetti over and over.
Mom's spaghetti.
See, if you guys had been there, you could have given me all this good stuff. So good job to everybody who was present at that game. All you know who you are. Thumbs up.
Yeah, whoever's idea it was for a rap battle, well done.
Yeah, that was Nathan, I think it was.
Okay, yeah.
It was either Nathan or Taylor, one of the two.
Gotcha.
They were both the ones that rapped, though.
So, oh, yeah.
Good on both of them. So, speaking of games, Finn, why don't you tell us about how you got into tabletop gaming?
So, ever since I was little, I just was really into... like gaming in general. I remember I had bought a pack of dice at Barnes & Noble. And it wasn't like D&D dice, it was just D6s. And I was just like, I'm going to make my own board game. I always try to make my own games and everything. until my uncle had been like, you know, you should listen to this thing called Critical Role. They do this episode about how... they do like this like extra episode on how to make characters. And... me, I completely forgot what the episode was, so I like it took me another year to figure out what Critical Role was. But I think I mentioned before that my first ever experience was my friends at high school who played second edition, and I was you know, completely expecting 5e, so I was a little familiar with 5e, but I had to relearn with the second edition and what THACO was. Still don't understand that.
Sure, yeah.
And you had to roll low as opposed to high. I remember actually another crit story. The first time I rolled and I got a natural 20, I was like, oh my gosh, I got a 20. And they were like, no, that's the opposite. You want to roll a 1. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I rolled and I got a 1. And so we were in the middle of the lunchroom, right? So we're all yelling and the teachers are looking over like, you okay? But yeah, and ever since then, I've been running homebrew campaign with my sister and cousins, and it's been a blast.
Cool. So are you guys ready to go on with the episode?
Yeah.
Indubitably. Let's do it.
So I want the two of you to imagine that you're in a library, okay, and you're looking for a book that is supposed to have directions to, I don't know, some big thing, a treasure or whatever. And you're going along, and you're looking for this book, and you just can't find it. And understandably, the two of you start getting frustrated, and you start arguing, and you start getting loud, and then you hear, shh, and you look over, and you see a very, very large individual with red scales and, like, a clawed finger in front of its snout.
Yeah.
And it's got these spectacles. It adjusts its spectacles, and then it looks down at the two of you, and it says, you should be quiet. Do you know why you should be quiet?
Why?
Why should we be quiet?
Because you're in the library. But this particular library is called the Dragon's Hoard.
I like to imagine that this librarian, when she shushes, the temperature in the room goes up a little bit.
A bunch of books catch on fire.
Right. She's constantly having to, like, replace all the books.
Now, yeah. Gabe, I will be using this in the next session of my next campaign, so...
Go for it. So today's magic item was submitted by Larry D. via email, and the item is Crown of the Library of Leng.
Oh.
Leng is L-E-N-G. I think that's a Lovecraftian thing. I could be wrong. Leng is something, I think. I don't think it's something Larry D. made up. Anyway, so Crown of the Library of Leng, attuned after 7 days. This delicate mithril crown is tooled to have open books depicted, as well as blue gems. A star sapphire rests in the front. One use per week, or work with the DM, it says, recharges under starlight 7 days worth. So you can use it, and when you use it, it has to recharge for 7 days under starlight.
That's so cool.
Yeah. For 10 rounds or up to 20 spell levels, no slots are used to cast spells. Also, for those 10 rounds, an additional cantrip can be cast as a free action.
Dang.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all it does. I mean, that's quite a bit. But
yeah.
It's not very complicated.
But yeah.
For 10 rounds or up to 20 spell levels, I imagine whichever comes first, you don't use slots to cast spells.
That definitely feels very much like, as cool as it sounds for a player, that actually sounds more like a, like, end of the campaign boss like item.
Sure, I can see that.
Maybe you're leading up with this Demon of the Moon, kind of like from Kubo and the Two Strings. And maybe it's something like where you're the boss of the whole campaign uses this to, like, do, like, 2 or 3 level 9 spells for this very overpowered party. And, like,
sure.
I think that your party would not see that coming.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. There are some items that do work really well for, like, the big bad of a campaign. And that's definitely one of them, I would say.
But also the attention to detail on it's for a week. So if the players can find a way to learn about this item, they could possibly obstruct its, like, 7-day, like, time limit of being in the sun. So now it adds a little bit of, like, player, we have to get this out of the moonlight or we're going to lose. There's no way we'll win if he has this crown. Which that sounds like an epic heist that I think your players would definitely enjoy doing.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds really cool. Anything that you can do to depower the big bad before you get to the big bad, I think is going to make for a really meaningful adventure.
I'm just trying to think of like ways that you would disrupt Starlight. You make a storm happen or something. I don't know. You can employ some sort of magical creature like a dragon or something I think there's some dragons that have can use fog, it's not just the spell fog, it's something.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of which ones, but I do feel like that's a thing. Maybe not in 5th edition. I know in earlier editions there were ones that had breath weapons that were a cone of burning fog or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Or there's plenty of magical creatures that can use control weather, once per day or something like that.
Or better yet, imagine there's the kind of anti-hero of the story is maybe this packed warlock, and they make a pact with him that he can have a lunar eclipse happen. Ooh, and or okay. something like that. And so now they've did this crazy deal with this villain they have to then deal with later. That could be a side mission, a one-off, one shot they do. But now they have made this crazy deal with basically the devil to obstruct the moonlight. That'd be so rad. Sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a good starting point for, a late campaign adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I don't know, stuff like this. So when it has to do with stars or the moon or sunrise and stuff like that, it always reminds me of, I think it's Chrono Trigger, which involves time travel, but you put the stone in sunlight.
Oh,
in
yeah.
the past, and then yeah. you go to the present or future or something, and pick the stone up, and it's been imbued with the power of the sun or something.
That's rad.
Yeah, there's a stone that it's a stone that has the power of the sun, but it's been extinguished, and they say this thing would have to be in the sun for thousands of years in order to recharge, and so you have to find a place in the world where the sun always shines, and then leave it there thousands of years in the past, so that then you can go to the future and pick it up.
Yeah.
So I don't really have too much else to say about this. It is really cool. It's definitely really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It would be cool to use in a campaign.
But not crazy, crazy powerful. It's not, I wouldn't say it's game breaking powerful because of action economy.
Yeah. Did you guys have anything else to say about it?
No, the flavoring is just really cool. I mean, flavoring just sure. can make a magic item from zero to hero for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the library part of it isn't super pronounced. It's just that it's got designs of books imprinted in the mithril of the crown. This does evoke the question of okay, what's the library of Lang and how do I get there? And will a big dragon say shh and then light a bunch of books on fire?
Right, yeah. What else is there, What right. What other magic items can be found there? I looked up, there's something called the Plateau of Lang that is from the H.P. Lovecraft stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Because I know that in one of the Pathfinder, I think it was in the Rise of the Rune Lords adventure path, at the end there's you're on a mountain that's so tall that you start encountering denizens of the Plain of Lang.
Whoa. Okay, yeah.
Or something.
That might be, this plateau is probably, yeah. Like, it's just a very, very tall mountain that reaches into a different dimension.
I guess. So, anyway, so that was the Crown of the Library of Lang, submitted by Larry D. Thank you very much, Larry D. That'll do it for the Dragon's Horde today. Jeff, if anybody else wanted to be like Larry D and submit magic items for the Dragon's Horde, or if they wanted to submit questions for us to discuss, or stories for the Funeral Pyre, Retirement Village, or a possible different segment later on, how would they get those to us?
They could send us an email at interpartyconflict@gmail.com or join us on our Interparty Discord at bit.ly/interpartydiscord.
There you go. Finn, do you have anywhere that you would like to tell our listeners they can reach you?
At the moment, I am, I like writing music. I'm in the middle of working on an EP. But it's not up yet. At the moment, you can just get me on the Interparty Discord. I can respond to questions or anything like that, or just be there to have fun.
Sounds good.
And I mean, if once that eventually is done, I'd love to post it.
Whenever you do, let me know and I'll mention it on a future episode.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, before we go any further, we have a giveaway to give away today. As usual, we're giving away a copy of three supplements from Crit Academy, the War Mind, the Skybreaker, and the Werecat. Three character options, as well as some other stuff I think Justin is tossing in there as well. So, Jeff, who is the winner of these three great supplements today?
Our winner today is David J.
Whoa, winner.
Gobble. Yes, congratulations, David J. Stiltskin Kupo 84. You should be getting that in your email pretty soon. Be sure to leave Crit Academy reviews. You can leave a review for each of the products that you get. And the more reviews you leave, the more attention they get and the more they know to work on improving products in the future. So please leave them some reviews. It's the least we can ask, I guess. So congratulations, David J. Thank you very much, Crit Academy, for facilitating this. Jeff, if anybody else wanted to enter this drawing and they wanted to win a copy of these great supplements, how would they enter the drawing?
They can enter by sending us an email at interpartyconflict@gmail.com with crit3 in the subject line.
That's correct. So again, thank you, Justin from Crit Academy. Congratulations, David J. Good luck to everybody else entering. Do you love Interparty Conflict? You know, the show you're listening to right now.
Yeah!
Then check out their Patreon at patreon.com/interpartyconflict. You can help support the show and get tons of bonus content too. Access hundreds of outtakes, dozens of short stories, periodic updates about the behind the scenes of the show, personalized media, a monthly Roll20 game run by Gabe himself, and more. Every month, green and red tier patrons get access to the bonus podcast, Interpatron Conflict, where Gabe and Jeff cover a wide variety of topics. Join right now and access the most recent episode, which might sound a little something like this. I don't even know how it started. Just at some point, I started saying the phrase tether bunnies as it, envisioning that we had tied the rope around our rabbit, Mops. And so she was just flying around, you know, swinging around
well,
this on this rope.
Sounds horrific.
It does sound horrific. I don't know how this started in the first place.
Yeah. But anyways, back to tether bunnies. So at one point, the ball just completely became untied from the rope.
So we had been throwing it at each other's faces for a little while.
Got tired of it
because we were like, oh, you know, surely it's not going to hit anybody. And then I don't remember what we were doing. Somebody just like tossed it to the side or whatever. And then it tore off.
Well, yes.
So we were extremely lucky that it tore off after we were done rocketing it at each other's faces.
And that was the trip where I disappeared with the ghost dogs.
Yes. Once again, go to patreon.com/interpartyconflict to help out the show and access all that bonus content today. And then one more quick thing. Check out the other podcasts on the Crit Nation Fellowship. Check out Crit Academy at critacademy.com. Justin, Ian, and Austin make new and reusable content for players and DMs alike. Also, check out Brute Force and Ignorance. They are back from hiatus now. They've been coming out with new episodes. So they're an actual play podcast, so check them out. They're a lot of fun. Also, check out D&D Character Lab. They, I think, just had the one episode when they came back from hiatus, but I think they're working on more. So hopefully they'll be coming out with more in the future. And also check out The Kind GM, which is similarly more advice podcasts for Dungeon Masters. So got a lot of great stuff on this network. Go check out all of them. Enough of all the admin. Let's get into some questions.
All right. Our first question comes from The Beverage Tea on Discord. And they ask, you're creating a homebrew campaign. Where do you start the process and what follows after?
Yeah, so that's a big project to start an entire homebrew campaign. So yeah, where's a good starting point?
For me, when I started my first campaign, like all on my own, I went to the infinite wisdom of Matthew Colville.
Okay.
He has a wonderful series on running the game. And episode 62 is an episode called Your First Town. And he basically just runs through Google Sheets, and he lists out this entire town, all of the people who work there, all their jobs, their relationships. Relationships are not as important, but I mean, obviously they are. You want to know who's dating who and who doesn't like who.
That's something that will probably be easier to come up with as you go through.
Right, right.
The campaign.
But that starting with the town and then building out from there is was very helpful in the early stages of creating my campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say pretty much the same thing. Start small. I would start, I would say maybe even start with the tavern the party's meeting in or wherever, whatever the first location is. Start there. Think about, okay, where do I want this to go at the very beginning? Maybe even plan out a first adventure, an introductory adventure. And then once you've got that down, then you can start thinking of, okay, what else is there for the players to do? Yeah. I feel like if I was a player and a campaign started and the DM was like, okay, yeah, you're in this town. What do you want to do? I'm not going to know what I want to do. Right. You know, there's everything I could do. So I think that probably like for the very beginning, especially if it's homebrew, if you do guide the players a little bit on a rail just to get them through the door, so to speak, you plan out, you know, what you want their first meeting to be and then their first adventure to be. And then after that, open it up, start coming up with the city, come up with the country, the different, organizations, the different power figures, the world, the gods, and so on and so on. Yeah. But like the first idea I would start with is like whatever is very, very small you can start with is better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys are right. I think like the ambitious, like the fun thing is like world building. It's like, oh, I want to make like, you know, for a campaign, you want to make the world that the campaign is in. So you like you get this big idea to like start building a whole world. But I think if you're trying to build an actual adventure line and campaign, you want to start off small. I would say like start with like the key locations and people, like the people who are like, you know, the most important to whatever story you want to tell. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of fill in the gaps from there. And it's the same with like building a city is like you set up the key areas. Like you got your tavern, you got your town hall, you got like the guard posts, the jail and all that. When you're designing a city or something like that, you put the important pieces together and then you kind of like, the path of least resistance between those things become the roads, and you know everything in between can be just like filler.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because it's trying to come up with a whole entire town, and just to have the characters, just to have the players not see 80% of it.
Yeah.
You might as well focus on the 20% that they're gonna want to see anyway.
And you know, when you start thinking about the town itself, and you start to think about the people who live there, you can then kind of think about different things that are happening in the town. And one of the things that I actually use when I'm making my games is I like to think of Skyrim kind of like as a base, in a way where like, you know, in one city, there are like multiple different little things going on in one city. And it helps that it's so small. Because you can really, it doesn't take up a whole lot of time. I mean, never mind. That's crazy. Skyrim takes up forever. but the fact, like, you can go through a whole city without having experienced, like, one side of the whole story. And you can still, like, interact with, like, the people who live there, the encroaching, like, bandit camp right outside, instead of joining them if you were to join the Thieves Guild instead. So if you have like at least three or four kind of like little small hooks that you can then develop later for the city, that like gives like your world some kind of like overarching like feel of like things happening without you having to do them.
Sure. Yeah, because the main concern is you don't want to spend a ton of time on something the players will never engage in.
Right.
So if you can come up with, you know, some kind of a hook that the players might be interested in. And then once they do start looking into that, then you can say, okay, now I'm going to put in the time to actually flesh this out and make this something real. Cause like I've been there, I'm sure lots of other DMs have been there where you go and you plan out, you got like a list of every NPC in the town. You've got, you know, this location, this location, this location. And then the players just don't care or they first chance they get, they're like, yeah, let's go to that other town.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's heartbreaking, and you know, it's just a waste of time. So I'm always looking for ways to like cut corners where when I don't know what the players are going to do, and then once they do latch onto something, then that's where I'm going to start spending time. Mm-hmm.
There's the book Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master that I haven't bought yet, but it is, there's a guy, Bob, a guy on YouTube who does like a review of it, Bob the Builder, but it's like World Builder, I think. Okay. And he did a, like a review, like kind of going through the book, and it is some of the most insightful stuff. Like it's better than the Dungeon Master's guide.
Okay.
I think it talks about just like the thing you were saying, focus on certain NPCs, like, maybe they're relevant to pop culture. You like maybe mm-hmm. base this off of like Gimli from Lord of the Rings, or you kind of base the surrogate character kind of like Han Solo from Star Wars, or just kind of like using people as templates for your NPCs and then developing them further is also a really good way sure. to flesh out your world.
Yeah.
Somebody I would recommend as far as like world building and campaign building, you know, people with more experience than us.
yeah.
There's a YouTuber by the name of Dale Kingsmill. Okay. It's Monarch's Factory is the YouTube channel.
Ooh.
And she does a very good job of like, cause she's basically built her own campaign and sure. like world and everything like that. I actually sat in on a live stream of hers. I want to say like a month ago that where she was basically just kind of like, she put a picture of the map that she made and just had everybody vote on a thing that like she wanted them her to like put into more detail and stuff, and then like half the time it'd be something she hadn't thought of yet, and so she kind of like built it out just on stream for the fun of it.
Sure.
That's so cool.
Which I think that's actually kind of a cool way to go about building something, you know. Because like building something on the fly in the middle of the game mm-hmm. can kind of slow the game down.
Sure.
But like if you kind of workshop it for people who aren't necessarily in the campaign, they like you just kind of put it out there and like, you know, put it on our Discord or something, you know, mm-hmm. and have people give you feedback and stuff, or ask like, what is this thing? What is that? And you yeah. can, you know, you can fill it out as people ask it. But anyway. She's actually the one, I think I referenced her a long time ago, Gabe. It was about like building a city or something.
Okay.
About making a town. And she, she didn't come up with it, but she uses this. It's called sperm.
Oh, geez. Yes, I do remember this. I think what you mean is merps.
No, Gabe, it's sperm. That way it's easier to remember.
Younger audience, like there's a conversation coming your way at some point.
Right. Because it's like social, political, economic, religious, and military. Yeah, religion and military. And like those are like the five beats you want to hit as far as like explaining your town. And then she'll be like, have an at least one NPC for each one of those that the players can interact with.
Sure.
That's so cool.
So, for, you know, for military, you're going to like, okay, there's like the guard captain or something that the players are going to interact with. Always have, you know, a name and a short backstory of one NPC for each of those facets in within the town. And that way, like, and you can always throw in a secondary NPC, just like a random name generator or something if you need it.
FantasyNameGenerators.com.
Oh, the best site in the world. Oh, my goodness.
There was one NPC generator I used a while back that was really good. Oh, shoot. Oh, I have it bookmarked. Oh, my God.
Nice.
Oh, no. It's no longer
oh,
website.
Oh, no.
It's gone.
Oh,
it's
gone, no. Now.
What was it called?
NPCGenerator.AzureWebsites.net. Like, that's what it was. That was the I remember this being so good too, because it would like have.
I have this in my history for some reason.
Like, it was pretty good. Like, it was pretty good. There was a bunch of drop downs you could put in, or you can just hit random on it, and like it would have like little like personal blurbs about them too. Be like they are, you know, like they follow this faith, but not strictly, and they have like they live with their mother or something like that, like, you know, it'll add little things like that. I don't know. I'm getting carried away. But yeah, Dale Kingsmill, Monarch's Factory. She's done a lot of work as far as like campaign creation, and she's got like plenty of videos on YouTube. So it's easy watching.
And last thing before we move on to the next question, Dawn of Worlds. You guys did that a while ago.
Yes,
I did that. I did that with my sister. We are working on her, like, her character has her home country that's away from the main continent I'm building. And so we're building her home country together. And it is like so rad. Like I remember it's basically this giant desert. It's kind of Egyptian themed. We're both watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Right now, so we're like, oh, let's do that. and I decided, what if there's just a giant hole that leads right into the ocean, right in the middle? And she's like, yo, what if this whole desert is built on top of a coral reef? And then we just, like, our minds exploded. And we would have never come up with that idea if we never sat down and drew something out. Like, Dawn of Worlds is so awesome.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. They use Dawn of Worlds to make, like, the character background for a player's character. That's awesome.
And the center of that place, we decided, like, oh, what if Tritons have, like, came out of that place, and now Tritons and Sea Elves and all the desert peoples have this weird kind of, like, counterculture against each other, but they still find a way to find harmony. And it's like, oh, it's so cool.
But yeah, that's aquatic really cool. Races living in the desert. That's great.
Oh yeah, it's like an oasis in a way that I'm getting sidetracked, but it's so awesome.
So speaking of sidetracked, sorry, I've been a little bit distracted for the last couple of minutes. I have some good news.
Oh, did you find that?
I used the Wayback Machine to go to npcgenerator.azurewebsites.net, which unfortunately like doesn't work, but one of them took me to a redirect, which still doesn't work now, but it does work in the Wayback Machine.
Whoa.
I just made it. Edmund Cornwallis is a 15 years old male Asimar bard. He has long braided dyed orange hair shaved on the left side and brown eyes. He has rough chocolate skin. He stands 154 centimeters and has a regular build. He has an oblong, slightly common face. He has a tattoo of the name of his childhood friend on his back.
That's so fun.
Tattoo of his.
So it does work. The link is in there. You can use that. I will put that in the show notes. I don't know how much of this I will have cut out or not.
He's always ready to help others. Oh wait, no, I generated a different one here.
Okay. He has been pressured by local drug dealers into selling drugs.
Whoa, that's rad.
Like, this is I loved this this generator. It's really cool. Yeah. And then like they don't have an alignment, they have alignment tendencies.
Ooh, which I thought was interesting. So cool.
So there's just like points into it's like, okay, so they're three in lawful, but also three in chaotic and three in neutral. So it's like they could swing in different ways for different situations.
I love that. That's so much.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm sorry I was a little bit distracted, but I knew I was onto something.
Well, found it. Thank you goodness you did. That is so. I'm totally keeping this. This like I'm totally using this.
One more thing I wanted to say on this topic is that so I said like start small. Of course, if you have an element of the campaign that you already have in mind that is pretty core to it, like let's say you already have a pantheon in mind, you've already got in your mind like, oh, the gods are going to be a big part of this campaign, and I've got this god and this god in mind, go ahead and do that. Don't feel like you have to stick to the small first. If there is something big, if you're like, oh, there's a corrupt king and he does this and this, okay, fine. Just try to keep like the majority of your focus on the small stuff. And then work out to the big stuff as you go, just so you're not wasting too much time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our next question comes from Matt E. on email, and they ask, how do you best balance homebrew mechanics? And for that matter, what are your opinions on homebrew in general? And then they also ask, how do you determine CR for homebrew monsters?
Yeah. So when you're making some homebrew stuff, whether you're making homebrew classes, monsters, races, anything like that, how do you balance them, and how do you determine, like with monsters, how do you determine the CR, how do you determine how appropriate they are for what you want them to be?
Mm-hmm.
I actually have an example of both that
sure.
I have my notes next to me. For homebrew mechanics, I actually came up with one for a future session I hope to do, and it's one that... Oh, by the way, guys, this is so huge. Whenever you make an encounter, put it all on one sheet. Put all the monsters on one... If you can fit it all onto one big sheet, you got all the stat blocks, all the stat blocks, all the notes, all on one piece of paper, and you're like, okay, where is the... bandit encounter, and boom, it's all in one sheet. Yeah. It's so helpful.
That's a good idea.
But I had an idea where it's like, you know how you sometimes you are like in a town and you fight a bad when you're fighting a bad guy in the middle of a town, but the guards come and help out? You know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's so annoying to have to run extra monsters in the initiative.
Sure.
So what I came up with is called a positive layer action. So as opposed to on rolling on a 20, a negative layer action would be like a monster action, but a positive one would be on like a 1 or a 5 or something. And the players get to roll a d20, and depending on their roll, it determines how much damage the extra guards around them do to the villains that they're fighting.
Okay.
So like for instance, if you roll 1 to a 5, it does nothing. 6 to 10, 1d6, and going up until you get to a natural 20, which is 4d6. And so it can create some crazy moments where like guard number 4 pulls out his short sword and puts a striking blow in the back of the enemy and you're like, "Whoa, guard number 4."
That's a really good idea. We've done episodes about like mass combat or just like how you do a battle with like a whole bunch of enemies, and that's actually kind of amazing if you can, if you want to illustrate that there are more creatures beyond just the, you know, however many you have the stats for in combat, having like a lair action type thing where once per round you or the players roll a d20, and then if they roll a certain amount, maybe this much damage gets done to the players. If they roll this other amount, this much damage gets done to the enemies or something. That's a really cool idea. That's a good mechanic. Good job.
And it gets even better from there, actually, because not only do you roll a d20, you roll a d4, or how many, like for me, there's 4 for this particular encounter. There's 4 bad guys. So, or 3 actually. You would roll 1 for one guy, 2 for the third guy, 3 for the third guy, and then 4, the players get to decide who the damage is dealt to. So it gives a little bit of a meta choice for the players. It makes them like, yes, we get to do it on like bad guy number 1.
sure.
But yeah, that's like, it just kind of adds to the just this like this positive layer action, and you can adjust the numbers based on like how, if it's like a boss enemy, maybe it's like 1 to 10 that it fails, or 1 to 8.
That's really cool. I like it.
Using the layer action system just on the player side. And yeah, going back to that question long ago about like mass, like large battles with like lots of people, if you're fighting like, you know, if your players are in the middle like of two armies clashing, like how do you manage all that? And like, I like the idea that the army kind of counts as a layer, and like maybe like the preparations that they make before the big battle adds more things that can be done in layer actions, or it adds like bonuses to the rolls on layer actions or something.
I'm writing this down.
So like, you know, like, okay, we dug all these trenches and stuff. So, all right, now we're going to get this, like, you know, this new layer action that can happen during the battle.
Sure.
Or like we fixed up all the trebuchets. So now there's this, you know, now suddenly there's like, you know, support, you know, siege support or something. I don't know. Like, or, you know, you fix them up and you get like a bonus to their role or something to get that as a layer action.
Yeah. You could do something sort of like a skill challenge. And then for every success that the players get, that's another number on the D20 that if they roll it, bad stuff happens to the bad guys. So like if they don't get any of them, maybe it's only on 15 to 20 or something. But then if they succeed on 5 of the checks, now it's a 10 to 20 or something.
Or they could do the opposite to the enemy. Like the enemies have their own, you know, battle layer actions, and like, but like during the night, the rogue and the ranger snuck into their camps and like burned all of their, you know, some of their ammunition or something.
Now, to answer Matt's question, this is why I like homebrew. because you have a problem and you feel like the rules don't really quite solve that problem. And I mean, that happens all the time in games. People are like, "Oh, how does Scrabble work?" Yeah. And I mean, obviously, it'd be preferable if you followed the rules on how Grapple works. But I mean, no one really understands how that works.
Scientist somewhere does, but
they're too invested on like solving some sort of like long math equation to actually share the answer.
right.
But yeah, like homebrew is just so awesome that you get to create these crazy mechanics that are so fun and different and unexpected for your players. One podcast that does this really well is Not Another D&D Podcast.
Okay, I've heard about that.
Brian Murphy, the DM for that, he uses for his monsters a combination of Kobold's Guide and Kobold like press stuff and his own creations to like make his monsters, and That stuff is so good for like as a base. I remember I went in there and used like reskinning, which you've talked about before, like reskinning a troll. Mm-hmm. I think you actually talked about it like one or two episodes ago.
Yeah.
And stuff like that is just so useful. And for how to balance it, I mean, go for it. And then behind the screen be like, okay, we're gonna decrease that damage. That was a little too much.
Sure. So yeah, trial and error is definitely a good way to balance things.
And it helps when it's lower level players, because when it's higher stakes and the numbers get really big, if you accidentally put like an extra d12 or extra 2d12 in there, that might really wreck a player and you're like, ooh. So I mean, kind of think about how much health points they have, what kind of stuff they have at their disposal. It's trial and error, but yeah.
Yeah. As far as balancing stuff, as well as determining CRs, my favorite thing is always to just compare it to stuff that exists. Mm-hmm. Of course, I do like to reskin things, so if I can reskin something, I will. But if a troll has this many hit points and this much damage roughly per round, and I'm making a monster that has roughly that same amount of hit points, roughly that same amount of damage, it's probably roughly the same CR as a troll. Let's say it doesn't have regeneration, though. Maybe it's one CR lower or something. And then same thing with making homebrew magic items. I look at existing magic items. Are there any other magic items that do something similar to this? Are they more powerful? Are they less powerful? And then I compare the rarity of that to is there something on the next step up or next step down that is roughly similar. And then if there isn't, you know, I like to err more on the side of being more generous to the players. That being said, balancing stuff isn't quite as important if you're not releasing like a product to the public or something. If it's just something you're using in your own game, it doesn't really matter what CR it is, as long as you are willing to watch it as it's happening, as they're fighting the monster. If you do see it's getting to be a little bit too strong, you can adjust it on the fly. You can have more NPCs show up or something like that. If it's not strong enough, you can have more of them show up. So it's not as important as you might think. But again, if you are making like a DM's Guild supplement or something, then it can be important. If you're making something that you plan on, I don't know, running at a convention or whatever, then that sort of thing is a little bit more important. But I would say it's less important. Just make sure that what you're doing is fun, maybe a little bit on par with something that exists, and then just keep an eye on it and adjust it as you go.
I think two videos that I would suggest, again, Matt Colville, he has a video called mm-hmm. Monkeying with Monsters, episode 41 of Running the Game. That one is actually how I use to homebrew like boss monsters and stuff like that. It's so easy. And then Action Oriented Monsters, episode 84 of Running the Game. That one, it like maximizes the use of the action, bonus action, reaction, and it just like creates monsters that are A, memorable, and B, really use the whole space in terms of like what's available in D&D combat.
Yeah, any monster that like uses all sorts of actions and uses like mechanics that you don't normally see is awesome. The more of the game that gets used, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, monsters that are just, they have this AC, this hit points, this attack bonus, and this amount of damage. Those are the least interesting.
Or the orc swings his sword. You swing your sword. It's looking really rough.
I mean, sometimes that happens. Sometimes it gets to that when it's less about the battle and it's more about getting to the destination or whatever. But like, if you want your encounters to be really, really fun and really memorable, you know, then that's where that sort of stuff comes into play.
Retract what I said a second ago, because that is up to the job of the DM to make something interesting. You can make it like very funny. For instance, like
true.
One of my favorite encounters, I think I mentioned before, Doc, the orc who joined our party. He was kind of reluctant to like fight us because he had already talked with one of our party members before the bad guys came up with the rest of the party before they met. And so they had to roll a persuasion check of like a natural, and they rolled a natural 20 to make him go on his side. Mm-hmm. But it was up to me to make, because they were so low level, to make it sound interesting of like, he's so, like, he doesn't know what to choose. This person he's met for 5 minutes, or his coworkers he's known for half of his life. And so that's kind of like the job, DM's job to kind of work on that.
Sure, sure. I guess just in general, my thoughts on homebrew, I am in favor of homebrew, but I do think a lot of the time it's unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you were saying, Finn, sometimes there just isn't something that the rules cover. If you are doing something with like mass combat or something close to it, there aren't really rules for that. And that's definitely something that homebrew is the best option for.
Mm-hmm.
There may even be other times where just what you want doesn't feel right within the rules. And, you know, again, in your own game, do whatever the heck you want.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that a lot of the time when people do go to homebrew, it's because they don't. I just feel like most of the stories I've read could have easily been done by something within the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it's just that the people didn't know all of the rules, or they didn't know the best way to adjudicate the rules. That being said, I'm not in any position to judge. I'm not saying don't homebrew. I'm just saying if you are as familiar with the rules as you can be, you might find less situations where you need to homebrew.
Yeah.
You know, if you're enjoying homebrewing, go for it. I'm not going to stop you, but you may not need it. Cause whenever I'm homebrew something, I get stressed out because I'm like, well, what if it's not good? What if it's not as good as this stuff that already exists? What if the players don't like it? And the reason being, because I just made it up. So I get a little bit self-conscious about that. And I wouldn't do that if I knew, well, it's in the book, you know, I didn't make this up or whatever.
I think you're right, Gabe, that it's like homebrew is good and fun, but like, know the rules first and see if the thing you're trying to achieve actually already exists in the rules and you just didn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in the rules, see if you can maybe just reflavor something that's already in the rules.
Right.
Yep.
And if that fails, then you can start looking into, you know, making something that fits more to what you're trying to achieve.
Sure. Don't do more work. Don't bring extra work for yourself.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, it's fun to be like, oh, I want to do this thing like in this video game or like in this movie or like in this book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of times like you're trying to recreate something that exists in a different game system or something when that thing could already exist in the game you're playing. You just didn't think of it in that way, you know?
Sure.
So
that reminds me, there is a supplement online that some guy made at Middle Earth Shadow of War. They get a subclass to play as Talion, and it's like at like level, whatever, like the third or second buff like upgrade for a ranger, you could dominate a monster of like a certain CR.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so broken. Like,
I know this.
You could at some point dominate a dragon to be on your team, which, I mean, let me tell you, that's what I want to play. But
yeah, right.
It's so broken and the rules for it are a little janky. But I think Horizon Walker kind of fits that like Talion feel of like from Middle or Shadow of War a little better than some kind of homebrew stuff.
Right. Okay. I remember it was like a D&D wiki submission or something,
Something
I was reading
like that.
Where it was trying to recreate all of the mechanics from Shadow of Mordor, and it's like, this is ridiculous. It's cool, but it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, It makes a really fun video game, but it makes a way overpowered D&D PC.
Really does.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question comes from Ravel G on email, and they ask, "What are your tips on creating homebrew classes, races, backgrounds, etc.?"
Yeah. So I just had a quick thing to say about this. I mean, this is again kind of covered. Some of this is covered by the previous questions. Like when you're making a class or race or background, I do recommend comparing it to ones that already exist. Mm-hmm. But I think that an important thing is make sure that the thing that you're creating, number one, is something that is going to be cool. And number two, serves a purpose that isn't already served by an existing class or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you're making a new class that is a fighter but better, you know, that's less important of a homebrew than something that's maybe more unique. Also, there might be something that you make that is is useful but isn't exciting. Mm-hmm.
Right.
When we had the episode with Crit Academy a few weeks ago, we made some subclasses, and I listened to a lot of interviews about making subclasses. And one thing that they stressed is you want it to be something that someone could look at and then be like, I really want to play that character.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if it's just fighter, but better,
yeah.
Mechanically, this is a weird example because it's not a real example, but like if it's just the same flavor as a fighter, mm-hmm. Why would someone want to play that over playing just a fighter?
Or rather, if you made it a fighter but better, what make, you know, like, it, I think if you're going to make something that someone would always play over something else.
Sure.
Like, I think just on the opposite side, it's like if you make it too strong or too cool, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess something can't be too cool, but...
Oh, just you wait, Jeff. I'll come up with something that's too cool.
Right.
Let me pull out fighter real quick.
Right. Yeah. Well, what I mean is like, yeah, like it's like it can be, it can sound as cool as you can. It's make it sound as cool as you can make it. Yeah. But as far as like the actual mechanics, you don't want it to be stronger than everything else, so that that's all that anybody ever wants to play.
Sure.
So like fighter but better is like, all right, well then I guess I'm just gonna play that instead of a fighter, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just make sure that it serves a good niche.
So I remember my sister, actually, she created her own race for her character she's playing right now. You know, have you guys ever watched Magus Bride? It's an anime based off.
Skylar loves that.
Yes. So my sister is in love with that show. She wanted to have, actually it's funny, her current character, she wanted it to be based off of like that one, but she wanted to do a rogue instead. I'm like, oh, okay. But for this next one that she's doing right now, for her, she created a Slaybeggy race. And so Slaybeggy, in the way they do it in Magus Bride, they're basically like people that are like touched by the fey world, like by the Feywild. I guess it's not called Feywild mm-hmm. in actual mythology, but in D&D it's from the Feywild, and they're so imbued with magic that their life expectancy is dropped like to like 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. But they can, the way that she wants to do, she created it, is that she basically had almost an absorb elements kind of like once per day reaction she could use, where if she gets hit by an attack, she could either absorb a part of the damage to her life points, or she could pull it back into another spell, and it kind of feeds into this like untapped magic that isn't too crazy. I mean, it's no crazier than like Stone's Endurance or the Dragonborn feature, but it's just like a fun flavor thing, and it creates your character like, what am I going to do with my 30 years of my life? And it's like something that's not in the game that adds like a really interesting character to the world.
Sure. Mm. Yeah, that's really cool.
Absorb elements, I think, is one of my favorite spells. It's just so cool.
So good. Yeah. It's so good for Eldritch Knight.
Yeah. So putting it into just like a racial feature or something, that's like, yes, that's awesome. I want that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just when creating homebrew stuff, just like make sure it's something cool. Make sure that it's not too cool, I guess. make sure it fits in a good spot that something doesn't already exist.
You want to balance form and function. Like mm-hmm. you like you want it to be, you want it to be functional in that it's like it's someone would actually want to, you like would actually be able to do something with it, like in the way that I've made characters in the past that like sound cool but are functionally useless. Because I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna make a, he's gonna be a, he's gonna be a ranger and he's gonna be really good at hunting and gathering, and it's like is that really gonna be helpful?
Jeff, this is a political intrigue campaign.
Yeah. Or no, it was a campaign where we killed a god. Like, I don't know how, yeah, like, tanning hide was going to do me any good.
Oh, although,
hey,
Kratos,
when you get good enough at tanning a hide.
Yeah. And I will say, Kratos, he is the god of war. He's pretty freaking good at hunting. Let's be real.
Well, right, that's but that's more just a, like a, that's just like a quirk.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah,
that's more,
you're right.
That's just like, a, that's flavor, whereas I was making the flavor the character, and rather than having this cool character with the flavor of also a hunter.
Right.
But yeah, yeah, you want to make sure, you want to pay attention to both form and function.
All right. So that'll do it for our regular questions for today. But we do still have our social media questions. Our last social media question was, what was your first experience with bags of holding or other extra dimensional spaces? Do either of you have an answer?
Jeff?
I can't remember what I said last time, but I'm remembering the hole in the wall from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I think that's what I mentioned. It's like guy throws a hole on the wall and like sticks his hand in it or whatever. It's supposed to be like in the like the Roadrunner cartoon or something, where like the coyote draws a tunnel on the wall so that the Roadrunner would run into the wall, but he actually runs through the wall as if the tunnel was actually there, but then like he chases after him and hits the wall. Yeah. So it's a play on that, but that's one of my earliest memories of that concept.
Fair enough. Finn, do you have a first experience with these?
So I never got one when I played my first campaign, but I introduced a thing in my own campaign for one of the arcs we did in our story. They had to shorten it down. They had basically an assassin character had stole the MacGuffin of the arc, and they were chasing it. And when they killed it, he had a bag around him that seemed deeper than it actually was. And what it was, it had a bunch of like bounties in it, both complete and incomplete.
Oh, okay.
And my idea was, somewhere in the world there is a box or another bag or like those cubbies that people like in offices where they put mail and stuff, basically, where there's a package of like bounties that the big bad evil guy or some kind of like maybe like Assassin's Guild has access to. They can put it down in that bag, and the assassin can just open their bag and find new bounties.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt this is something that could be used for all forms of people in the world, like actual messengers and bounty hunters and adventurers, like the players. And they actually got into some shenanigans where like they crossed their own selves out on a bounty. So they looked like they had killed themselves. They looked like the guy who did it had like offed them, but they were still alive. So they got the one up on the bad guy.
There you go. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea for like just like giving information to the players, like having them find this bag with like basically their own bounties in there or something.
Yeah, it was cool. Definitely like a oh crap, just like, a moment like that.
And they like, what are they gonna do with that information now? Like if they see a list of bounties, like you know they can be like, oh, let's go around and like warn these people or something.
And that's exactly what they're actually hoping to do. And actually, not only that, but also. Make some money for themselves as well.
Sure, yeah, sure. Like the ones that they think, the ones that they've judged differently. It's like, this person doesn't deserve to die. Let's go warn them. this guy, let's get the reward for this one.
Yep. And I think for myself, I had read, I'd read about bags of holding in the Dungeon Master's Guide, but I think the first time I ever actually encountered one was in Neverwinter Nights, where they kind of suck.
Oh, right, yeah.
There's like a bunch of really crappy versions of them that you pick up before you actually get a real one. So I think
the mechanics of it in the video game were kind of just sort of whatever.
Yeah. So we didn't get very many responses, and that's fine. But on Facebook, Jake F. says, I played a very skeptical ranger who didn't enjoy using magic or constantly reframed the spells he was using as knacks or tricks. Mm. Our party was given a bag of holding by a patron, and our magic users spent a very specific amount of time describing what not to do with it, noting especially that it would harm or kill sentient creatures if we managed to put one inside, but objects and items were safe. My ranger referred to the bag in all future instances as the bag that eats people, not things.
That's awesome. That's pretty good. I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Sean M. put an animated GIF of the Roadrunner and Coyote doing exactly what Jeff was describing.
Nice.
Over on Reddit, Alistar the Minotaur says, my first experience has been pretty similar to most of my experiences since then. It just kind of becomes an unending hole that my party throws gear into, regardless of weight or dimensions. Every group I've been in roundly ignores the carrying capacity rules regarding bags of holding, and nowadays I almost always start off my party with one.
It's just so helpful, and it's like it's so annoying to have to be like, well, how are you going to carry all this stuff? And I mean, and if the players agree to that, it's fine. But I mean, it's kind of like video game rules, you know? You don't want to have to be carried. All right, the village sees you with your 300 pounds of deer hide and goblin teeth and random things, and they do not want to make deals with you.
Yeah. I've said before that I don't really like bags of holding, and it's because I feel like their only purpose really is to eliminate bookkeeping, which most parties ignore anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not keeping track of how much gear you're carrying, which a lot of parties don't, then bags of holding don't really serve a purpose except for weird shenanigans with putting one inside another and then whatever.
I mean, there's certain things, like, you know, like when it comes down to like large things, like you have a bag of holding for specific situations. You don't necessarily have it for like carrying everything in the world. You just have it for like, all right, we need to move this heavy thing from one end of the town to the other.
The players wrap the bag of holding around an outhouse. They expand.
So that, yeah, they can go to the bathroom anywhere they want.
There's actually a story that's been shared on Crit Academy a couple times where the party found what they didn't realize was it was an outhouse where the actual like toilet part was an extra dimensional. It was basically a bag of holding. And without realizing what they were doing, one of the players turned it inside out, which causes everything inside to.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No.
That's amazing.
Yeah. No.
That's one word for it.
No.
Crappy is another word for it. So over on Twitter, we didn't get anybody on Twitter. And on Discord, StiltskinCoopo84 says, I think the entire party pooled their money from our first couple adventurers to get one bag of holding. Earlier, we had killed a young green dragon in its lair, and we team carried a chest of platinum, gold, and silver out of its hoard. But for weight reasons, we had to leave most of the copper pieces behind. So we went back with our newly purchased bag of holding and got the rest of the hoard.
Yeah, there you go.
Then we basically used it for holding all of our spare copper and silver pieces, keeping track of who put in what on paper. We kept other stuff in there too. Then whenever someone else in the party had amassed enough wealth, we went to the bank where they made their withdrawal from the bag, exchanged for lighter currency, and then took that and got their own bag of holding at the magic shop. Everyone in that campaign eventually had one bag of holding, and if I recall, at least one character had two.
Right. So at the end, you all have bags of holding, but no money. We have so much treasure and nothing to carry it in. Why don't we use this treasure to buy the bag of holding? All right, great. Now we have a bag of holding and no treasure.
Yeah.
No, bag of holding is, they're great.
Lone Wolf Nate says, I think my party found one while we were running through the Tyranny of Dragons campaign. And that's the whole story. I guess there is one in that campaign. Flash 85 says, one of my first time playing D&D, the DM handed them out early. My groups have never been strict on weight limits and how much we can hold, so the bag of holding itself never felt special to me specifically.
Right. Yeah.
And I totally understand that. I feel like a lot of the time they're unnecessary, except when someone is trying to put one inside the other. And then just one more. Dustin says, I was playing in a game where a wizard had made his lab inside the extra dimensional space of a bag of holding. Unfortunately, his work had torn the fabric of reality, allowing horrors from beyond reality to enter through the inside of the bag. Once these were defeated, we had a room inside a bag we could stay in, but no one was very comfortable staying in it for very long.
Man, I hate when that happens.
Yeah. I think there was a running gag in our Age of Worms campaign where Steve's character didn't realize it, but there was a character living inside his bag of holding.
Yeah. Like, I think there was a scene where he's eating something and like a hand reaches out of the bag and dabs his face with a napkin.
Well, yeah, he's at a fancy party and he had done magic or whatever, so the bag of holding was part of his clothing. And so he's eating and like he doesn't realize it because his character was unintelligent and wasn't very observant. He's eating, he's talking to someone, and then a hand just comes up and like wipes something off his face and then goes back. And he just goes on as if nothing happened. But the person he's talking to is just like, what just happened?
What was that?
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all the responses we got. So thank you everybody who wrote in. So that was our last social media question. Our next social media question is, have you ever played a homebrew class, race, or other character option? What was your most memorable experience and how did you like it? So pretty broad question. Hopefully we'll get a bunch of responses. Jeff and Finn, did either of you have one that comes to mind?
Jeff, you want to go first?
I don't think I have one, so I'm trying to think, but you go ahead.
So I mentioned him before, but the legendary Rolf Alistar, the Dragon Knight, was my first character. It was a second edition character, but it was a D&D Wiki 5e class that I was like,
okay.
I really wanted to have a dragon companion, because that sounded like super cool to me. But Ranger, I didn't know what like Sui Ranger sounded like. And my player and my DM, God bless his soul, he converted that for me. And Douglas the dragon was like my little companion, and it was just so fun. I think I mentioned before, but one of the player's stone golems that he had would throw Douglas into a room like a grenade basically, and he would like spin fire and they'd kill all the ads in the room. And it was just like, I can only use it like a couple times a day, but it was just so memorable to have this like little buddy companion of mine that was like the last of its kind. And I don't know what's happened to him. I hope to actually at some point like make him a character that's like, he's like, his dragon's become a Draco Lich and he's become like almost a vampire character. And it's like, I'm very excited to make him like some kind of evil guy at some point.
Sure.
But yeah, that was my first experience.
I can't think of an example as far as any like homebrew, other than just like, I don't know, like early on, I'd be like, oh, this is a cool idea. Let's do something like this, like little sure. add-ons more so than like actually like full made classes or races.
Okay.
I think I attempted to make a turtle race once.
Okay.
Very on brand.
Right. Yeah. I think it was like third edition or something like that. I was basically just like taking bits from other races and trying to like slap them together into one just to kind of make something. But I don't think I've actually like played any homebrew stuff.
Yeah, the only one that comes to mind for me was actually Ichi. I had convinced the DM to let me play a barbarian that instead of getting a bonus to their strength and constitution, got a bonus to their strength and dexterity. Because in my mind at the time, that's what I thought, like, oh yeah, that's what like a samurai. That's, you know, I was kind of basing my character off of a very, very skewed idea of what a samurai was. And I did it. And like, it's funny because at the time I remember I mentioned it on some online forum somewhere. People were like, oh, that's way too broken. You know, dexterity is way more powerful than constitution. And then like a year later, Unearthed Arcana came out and had the Whirling Frenzy. I think it was a Whirling Frenzy barbarian variant, which was better than what I had come up with. It didn't increase your dexterity, but it gave you a bonus to AC and a bonus to to your reflex save. So it was, you know, very similar, and also gave you an extra attack around.
What?
So like, it's like, okay, that's way better than what I had come up with. So I didn't anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And fits in line with
and the people will be like, oh, that's so underpowered.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the only one I can think of that I actually got a chance to play. You know, I've come up with little homebrew stuff here and there, but don't think I've ever actually played anything, at least not for more than a session. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have some responses from our listeners. So that'll do it for our questions for today. But before we close out, Jeff and Finn, let's take the knowledge we learned today and apply it in the laboratory. So this is a new segment that was actually suggested by Finn. And so Finn, why don't you tell us what you're going to be talking about today?
So today, this is also kind of related to the question about CR rating, because I actually have a boss monster that I had created to end this like adventure that I was working on.
Sure.
The players were supposed to go to find this like alchemical base, and when they had went to the old manor that it used to live, there was an obelix that was inside.
Ooh, okay.
And that was so fun to mess with a creature I've never done before. That's not the one I'm talking about though. That's just the precursor. And when they had gone to further in, they found that they were connected to the well, and they encountered a mind flayer, and it's okay. Named Jazota. And with a name like that, you'd be like, "Ooh, so regal, so interesting." Now he's a teen mind flayer.
Okay.
And so I basically created this mind flayer who's very a radical teen for sure. I had the idea that the obelix didn't like the smell of like burning herbs, so he would put that at the edge of his cave. And what more than the great than pot to keep obelix away? And so, but yeah, Jazota is a young mind flayer that was like 71 HP was what I decided on that.
Sure.
For I think it was a level 4 party at the time, with three level 4 and then their sidekick Doc. So it seemed outmatched, but even despite being as weird as he is, he had concoctions. He took the baby obelix from the person upstairs and basically cracked them down on the ground and had little minions to fight with him.
Okay.
He's like, "Oh yeah, that's rad."
angsty teenager mind flayer. That's sure. Pretty good.
And you know, there's the I won't go too far. In the book, there's the alternative for spell casting, and I thought because he is like a radical teen who doesn't want to follow the rules, he's like basically gotten rid of his like ability to dominate people. Like the psionic stuff, and he's more into the more earthy stuff, you know, spells from the ground, from the very earth we walk on, man. And
that was great.
Yeah, it was such a fun encounter. Poor Jazota had no chance. He was very fun to work with, and what a great boss.
Cool.
Very good.
So yeah,
me how to eat brains, Dad.
That's pretty good. So in the future, we'll be, if anybody wants to submit a homebrew monster or a variation of a monster or something like that, we can feature them in segments like this in the future. So I think that's hilarious. I think it's a great twist on an existing monster. Anything you can do to make a monster less of a credible threat, I guess, or less taken seriously, I think is a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's good to do stuff like that, because like there are really cool monsters that you want to put in your adventures, but they're too powerful for the players at the moment. So it's like it's a nice to have like a you know, a lesser version or a dumbed down version of a tougher monster, just so you can put it in a, you know, a lower level adventure.
Yeah. So I don't have a good send off for this one. I guess let's raise a glass in memory of, what was the name again?
Jazota.
Let's raise a glass in memory of Jazota, because we're the parents upstairs having a drink while the while our angsty teen is throwing a tantrum in his room.
Clink.
So yeah, thank you very much, Finn, for coming on the show. Thank you very much for bringing in that idea for that segment. Would you like to tell our listeners once more anything, anywhere they can find you or anything you're working on?
Well, yeah, keep your ears open for when my EP finally finishes up. Is it going to be great? I hope.
hopefully.
But in the meantime, you can, I'll be on Discord. I get on every now and then just to say hi. And I mean, if you have any questions about anything, I mean, obviously there are much smarter people out there. Beverage Tea, I'm looking at you. Dustin, looking at you. Collins B. Obviously. But yeah,
there's always going to be people smarter, so
I'm open.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I had a great time. Hopefully you did too.
Oh, this has been a blast.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
All right. To submit questions for us to discuss, items for the Dragon's Hoard, or stories for the Funeral Pyre, please email us at interpartyconflict@gmail.com. For show notes, links to media mentioned on the show, and running lists of questions and magic items, go to interpartyconflict.com. And actually, you can, because I fixed the problem that I was having.
Oh, man.
Yay.
I found out in each... I don't know what caused them all to switch to, like, HTML or whatever the heck it was, but in each... in each entry field, there's like a little thing you can click that switches it back over.
So. There might have been like an update that like cleared that choice or something.
Yeah, maybe. So it'll take me a little while to get all the previous episodes updated. But yeah, so go to interpartyconflict.com for all of your interparty conflict related needs. Join the discussion on social media. Find us on Facebook. We're on Reddit. We're on our Interparty Discord. We're also on Twitter at InPartyConflict. Check those out for our weekly social media questions. Your answers might end up on the show. Find us on the podcatcher of your choice. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, YouTube, Spotify, anywhere you download podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe, or just tell a friend. If you'd like to support the show monetarily, check out the rewards at patreon.com/interpartyconflict. We have a few different tiers, so anything you can spare, even a dollar a month, would go towards making the show better, and you'll get bonus content for it. Jeff, tell us about FriendQuest.
FriendQuest is a YouTube channel where you can watch us play video games.
Also, you can head over to bit.ly/interpartyconflict to take a short survey about our show, what you like, what you don't like, etc. And just for taking it, you'll get 2 free printable board games courtesy of the great people over at hollandspiel.com. And our music is made by Boxcat Games from Nameless the Hackers RPG. So, Finn, until next time.
Well, guys, I think the Potato Plunderer stole the show.